Welcome back to Canna Week, brought to you by New Frontier Data, where we deliver the week's top headlines in cannabis and hear experts weigh in on the impacts these stories are having on the industry. I'm your host, Heather Wickline. I'm going to be taking a peek into the cannabis industry and what's going on in Latin America. And our guest today just happens to be an entrepreneur with over 15 years in Latin America. He is the co-founder, CEO, and director at Chiron Life Sciences. Please welcome Alvaro Torres.
Hi, Heather. How are you?
Good. I'm doing well. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes. And always, I am pleased to welcome back the Chief Knowledge Officer at New Frontier Data. He leads up our amazing research team, Mr. John Caguia.
Delighted to be back, Heather. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Alvaro, could you give us a little rundown on Chiron for people that may not be, you know, familiar with your company? Because I know, if I'm not mistaken, you are primarily focused in Latin America and Europe. So maybe some of our listeners in the States may not have a full understanding of who you are.
Well, thank you, Heather. Again, thank you so much for having me. Yes, our company, Chiron, we are a patient-focused medical cannabis company. We are aiming to disrupt the pharmaceutical industry using medical cannabis in Latin America and Europe. These are the next two markets that are going to be emerging internationally when it comes to bringing medical cannabis to the forefront. And our objective is to improve the quality of life of patients in these two regions using medical cannabis. It's been 2 years since we started. We are right now the category leaders in markets like Colombia and the UK. And I think we are well on our way to be the leaders in this space outside of North America.
Amazing. I follow you on LinkedIn and I saw that you, it was once you had given your first prescription or something, it was the day before the pandemic hit.
Yes, it was the day before the government of Colombia shut down the entire country. So in a sense, was very happy. Of course, then you have to face a whole new set of challenges, but we have, fortunately.
Yep, it's like a survivor story. You beat the odds having that timing.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing. Well, given your background, what made you come into cannabis? What made you think cannabis now and make kind of that transition?
Well, Heather, I think my background doesn't indicate any knowledge of cannabis before, because
that's what I'm saying. It's so different from what you're in now that I'm just wondering what made you kind of make that decision to move into cannabis.
Well, I'm not a cannabis user. I've always been in infrastructure, building projects and building companies. But what I found appealing 5 years ago was that Colombian government legalized medical cannabis. And of course, most people look at that opportunity as the opportunity to grow cheap cannabis and supply it to the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. Now, that's the way Colombia has been doing it with coffee, bananas, plantains, flowers. And what I was thinking is, if this is a real medication, the big market here is our own market of Latin America, and eventually the markets in Europe. There are 750 million people in LATAM that are consuming opiates every day, that are very expensive and are damaging, not only the health of our population, but are also very expensive for the systems. So what if we, instead of trying to sell coffee at $1 a pound, what if we try to build a brand and try to sell Starbucks coffee for $5 a cup? And that analogy is how we started a company. And that's actually why we named the company Chiron, not marijuana anything or canna anything. And it's really about how do we improve the quality of life of people. There's a very big market here. Let everybody else try to fight for that low-cost commodity fight, which is going to get us nowhere. But we have to build all the infrastructure to make sure that we can provide access for patients with medical cannabis. And from there, we started in Colombia. We started building evidence. We decided, why don't we take this evidence to Europe? Sounds crazy, but and now we are one of the top selling brands in the UK, because I think it's all about convincing doctors that this is for real. And if you have evidence and you have data and you have a really good supply of high quality product and you have that connection, that's how you build a real brand. That was the idea 5 years ago.
Amazing. John, any burning questions for Alvaro?
No, I think some of this we're going to be getting into as we go through the conversation. But Alvar, really excited to have this conversation with you. I'm curious, from your perspective, what was the biggest kind of operational or implementational challenge you faced pre versus post pandemic? So, you know, you have this major success getting the first product out, the pandemic hits. What were some of the biggest changes you had to make to your growing business as the pandemic set in?
Well, John, that's a very good question. I'm going to try to narrow it down to a couple of things that I think are more important for us. I mean, before the pandemic, for instance, before we started selling medical cannabis, we were thinking a lot about CBD-based consumer packaged goods, particularly cosmetics, things like that, that you are seeing a lot in the market now. And once the pandemic hit, we were in a very good, you know, runway to continue sales, but we start realizing after the pandemic how difficult it is to really do those type of products. So one of the, let's call it, ramifications of the pandemic is that we started selling medical cannabis with very high gross margins, and we decided just to focus on that and not continue on the route of doing consumer packaged goods. Like, having done that already, having introduced the first brand in Latin America, I can tell you it takes a long time to really build those type of brands. Mm-hmm. But medical cannabis, that's where the evidence is, that's where our growth is happening. And I think the pandemic made us choose. You cannot be good at everything. But if you're really good at something that's returning very high profitability, like we do in medical cannabis, let's stick to that. I think that focus in the pandemic has helped us a lot. And I can only think what's going to happen after the pandemic. Mm-hmm. if we have been able to grow this fast and this during those times. I think secondly, in terms of as a business overall, the pandemic caused us to really evaluate how do we go for access on patients, because the pandemic created very big difficulties in getting patients into clinics, doctors educated, because all of a sudden you cannot go and visit doctors, right? You're all shut down for 7-8 months. So you have to really think quick about telehealth or access, or how do we build that easiness? How do you make it easier for the patients to be able to access the medications they have? And it's a lot more challenging. But then on the plus side of that equation, we started to build a moat around our business that today is very hard to replicate, because we had to build all of these tools very fast. Today in Colombia and the UK, the education, the home delivery, the quality of the product, that was, you know, something that thankfully, because of the pandemic, we were able to build upon. And so it gave us a lot more focus and it helped us build a bigger moat. But you didn't know that at the time, no? You were thinking, now what do I do? But I think when you're always obsessed about making sure that patients are doing better and you think about how to make their lives easier, mm-hmm. you start building all these strategies that make you more focused. And I think today we're starting to see the results of that focus.
So when you're talking about telehealth, do you feel like that now that the pandemic's, you know, sort of lifting, are people going more back into in-person, or is telehealth, do you think, is going to remain something that's really strong for you?
Well, I think we have to look at it region by region, because mm-hmm. one of the things this company understood very well, we understand, is that you cannot apply the same concepts everywhere in the world. I'll give you an example. In Latin America, for instance, telehealth for medical purposes is not a sticky business. And the reason is because even in the pandemic, as you can recall, probably in the United States as well, in the UK, the only reason people could get out of their house is to go to the doctor. Mm-hmm. So if you are a 65-year-old arthritis patient and you are now confined to your home, you want to figure out a way to leave your house without getting stopped by the cops and be able to go to a doctor. So the impact of telehealth in Colombia was mostly about the repurchase of cannabis, so that it's easier for the patient just to get their prescription again, but not for the first consult. So which is, you know, somewhat odd. You would imagine most people like to take telehealth, but patients above 60 years old are not that technologically savvy in our part of the world. Mm-hmm. So installing a new software, installing Teams, trying to talk to a doctor, that it's very difficult to get patients on board unless they are returning patients. So for us, telehealth is more of a tool for repurchasing or to give back scripts for repeat patients, because now they know what they want. But that first time they want to see the doctor is still, even the pandemic today, they want to go and see that doctor live. But that doesn't apply in the UK. In the UK, for example, our clinic is only telehealth because we have seen a shift from patients to be able to go and talk to the doctor, because in the UK, most of the patients want to try medical cannabis. It's the doctors sometimes that don't want to or are not educated enough to feel good about prescribing it. Whereas in Colombia, patients don't know they want cannabis. It's the doctor who has to convince them. So when you talk about the UK, we have patients from all over the UK that are able to log into one platform, have a real knowledgeable doctor, and it makes it easier for them, particularly now that we're seeing high inflation, transportation costs going up. In those parts, like the UK, patients prefer to use telehealth. I mean, we even have an ability for patients to go to a clinic that we rent on the hourly basis in Chelsea. Very few patients choose to do that because it's much more convenient for them to use telehealth. Mm-hmm. So it's not an answer that fits everybody. The use of the tool changes country by country, but certainly it's a very important tool to have, particularly in Europe.
Yeah, amazing. Well, it sounds like you are pivoting in all the right directions for each country. So let's move on. Benzinga.com reported rewriting the cannabis narrative in Colombia. Mm-hmm. So the stigma surrounding cannabis has been a consistent challenge for operators hoping to take advantage of this multifaceted cash crop. Colombia, which passed a framework to regulate the production, distribution, sale, and export of cannabis derivatives in 2016, and then dried flower in 2021, can really provide some insight into future trajectory of international cannabis. So Alvaro, in your opinion, how has the narrative around cannabis shifted in Colombia in the past few years?
Well, when we look at it from a domestic market perspective, Heather, which is really what we focus on, mm-hmm. our main focus, it's astonishing the growth in acceptance from patients and doctors and medical cannabis. I mean, when I founded this company 5 years ago, I think not even my family wanted to acknowledge that I was in that business. And today is a very different perspective. Today, patients are seeing the evidence. There's Instagram stories. More doctors are open to it because it works. And I think that's what's driving our domestic market and the acceptance from the overall population regarding medical cannabis. In terms of the export, the government has been very open to supporting the industry from a B2B perspective, which means how can we help Colombian companies export their products to other markets as a semi-finished good, let's say. I think the challenge there is not necessarily the Colombian government part, but on whether there is demand on the other side to take on all these huge amounts of cannabis that want to be exported from Colombia. I mean, we do export from Colombia to Peru, Brazil, and soon into Mexico. But that's because in those countries, we already have our go-to-market strategy and we export finished product from Colombia, Kyron branded. So we don't sell to third parties. But from the B2B perspective, I think the challenge and the opportunity at the same time is to find those international markets that are open and that are big enough to import all the product that's coming out of the country. But I think from a Colombian government perspective, everybody's for medical cannabis exports in whatever shape or form. And that was something we didn't have 5 years ago. So that's all very positive. It just takes consideration if there is a market out there to be able to take on all this product.
Right. Well, John, this must be music to your ears because we've talked about the normalization before legalization, you know, trend in the U.S. What do you have to say about what Alvaro was talking about?
There's so much to unpack there that I think is so fascinating and so instructive to anybody who's trying to do this. You know, one of the things that I think that Alvaro, that you and your team have done that's so important is focus on the domestic market first, even as you build for the international capacity. I think you saw almost the exact opposite happen in Canada, where they were building capacity to serve the entire world, even though the rest of the world was not ready for that scale of operations yet. And, you know, it's part of the reason why you're seeing all these mega facilities, including Aurora just announced they're shutting down Aurora Sky, the world's largest cannabis facility, because they build too much too quickly without a good understanding of how legal demand globally was going to emerge and grow. So Alvaro, I'm curious, you know, how you're forecasting the relative proportion of opportunity in Colombia internally versus the rest of the world. And, you know, how do you plan for this? How do you plan out for this at a time where some of these countries are moving a little more slowly than we had anticipated? But in countries like Germany, you are actually starting to see very rapid adoption as medical cannabis patient interest and participation has grown.
Well, John, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, when we talk about big numbers and that phrase, total addressable market, mm-hmm. one can get lost in all these huge numbers.
Yes.
I mean, we've lived it in Colombia, 50 million people here. Mm. We've seen only 30,000 patients. No, we do sell a lot of medical cannabis, but the potential is huge. I think for us, it's all about focus. Our top markets right now are Germany, UK, and Colombia. We know we grow every month. And we grow because we have repeat customers. They come back every month. They buy more cannabis. And the better service we have with that business alone, those three countries, we are going to be in very good shape. Mm-hmm. Then you have to think about little bets. What are the bets that you have to make where you can translate your business model in a market that's bigger? For us, that's Brazil and Mexico. Mm-hmm. Because in Latin America, we know the challenge is not to grow cannabis. The challenge is to get doctors to prescribe. And once we figure out, we already, that our clinic's model works, that today, 3 out of 4 patients that come to the clinic leave with a prescription, and they pay twice as much as they did last year, that's because it works. And if we can implement that in a much less, let's call it cash burn type of structure, because we did that in Colombia on our own, we had to invent the entire business. Those are the small bets that we do want to make, because there is a big appetite for cannabis because patients want it. But we have to remember, it takes one doctor, one patient, it takes 2 months, 3 months for the patient to come back. But that snowball effect in these markets can be very big. You can get lost in trying to enter every market in Latin America or even Europe. I think we have to just be patient. In the UK, we started 2 years ago. And it took us a year and a half to get that traction going to a point where today we sell more in the UK than we sell in Colombia. You know, imagine that. Mm-hmm. But we cannot be everywhere at once. And I think we have to think, the way I look at it is, how sustainable is that market? Mm-hmm. How big can it be? And do we have the right tools to make it there? Because if you can, it's not about selling a patient one product. You have to be able to sell that patient one product every day, every month, for a long time. Mm-hmm. And if that market doesn't offer that opportunity, then that's not something we're going to be looking at. And regulation-wise, you know this better than me, John, everybody gets excited about new laws. Mm-hmm. But from a law to an actual product sale, it takes 2 years.
Yes.
So sometimes it's not important to be the first. We were the first in Colombia and in Peru. But that's not something we necessarily want to do all across. But we do know how to do. Mm. Is that we know how to convince doctors to prescribe cannabis. Mm. And if we can take it to other markets with our clinic strategy, where we can own our own demand, we will do that. But it's not going to be everywhere. And there's plenty of time, right? Like, cannabis is not going anywhere, Heather. Yeah. This is a real medication. Yes. 100 years from now, we'll still be there. So sometimes you just have to be a little bit more patient. Don't try to enter every country at once.
So such an important point you make about demand being higher, or at least your current trajectory of sales being higher in the UK relative to where it is in Colombia. As you forecast this out, and not just based on where demand is currently, but assuming these markets reach maturity, What are you expecting in terms of proportionality of your revenues coming in from Latin America versus coming in from Europe? Where do you think you'll be doing the bigger book of business?
I think for this year, and I'm gonna take Mexico out of the equation, John, because it can boggle down everything. But this and next year, I would say Europe is going to represent more than 55-60% of our revenues. Mm-hmm. Not that we're gonna have more patients in those countries than like we do in Colombia, mm-hmm. but in the UK, for example, last quarter, a Chiron patient in the UK could afford 320 Canadian a month. Wow. Whereas in Colombia, even with insurance companies, it's $130 a month.
Yes.
So the purchasing power of Europe is going to mean for us that less patients can represent a lot more revenues.
Yes.
From a patient count, I think Latin America will always probably be higher in terms of the number of patients that come. But of course, the purchasing power is much smaller. Mm-hmm. From a gross margin perspective, John, it would be half and half because in Latin America, we have the advantage that we cultivate in low-cost jurisdictions like Colombia. So we are able to enjoy 90% gross margins. I know that sounds crazy, but that's just the way it is, versus a 70% gross margin in Europe. So in terms of revenues, Europe certainly much going to be bigger for the next 2 years. In terms of gross margin, probably the same. In terms of patient counts, more so in Latin America. But okay, again, once Mexico comes online as its full might, then you know it's going to be an interesting conversation with our VPs, who's going to be doing more than the rest. But I think Europe, it's certainly the next 2 years going to be very key for us.
How do you expect the international market for medical cannabis to evolve over the next few years?
Well, I mean, I'm only focused on Latin America and Europe, Heather, so mm-hmm. I won't pretend to be an expert in what's happening in Israel or the rest. Mm-hmm. I think in Latin America, it's Mexico, Brazil, Colombia. I think Argentina could be, in the next 3 years, something really unique. They just passed a new law for medical cannabis, and Argentina is a very big country with a lot of potential. And of course, the problem, I think, is that most of these countries are also legalizing self-cultivation, which sort of gets in the way of this big market. But I think just Mexico, Colombia, and Brazil are big enough for the next 5 or 6 years. In terms of Europe, of course, you know, everybody's talking about Germany. Germany has a lot of potential still because only 10% of the physicians are prescribing cannabis. So there's a lot there yet to be done. UK just getting started. And you know, we're talking about 80 million people being able to pay £200 a month. There's a lot of a market there. And the UK is a market where patients want cannabis. Just doctors don't want to prescribe it yet. So if we can break through that, that would be tremendous. And it would be like Germany is 5 years ago. Besides that, I think, you know, for us, Spain as a domestic market is going to be very important. It's going to take at least another 2 years for them to get the thing going. France is sort of starting in the way, but they started, you know, the very French way with some studies, and it's going to take some time to evolve. But if we look at the market 5 years from now, all of Europe will have a domestic market, and that's going to be huge. And for us, since we're not in the business of cultivating cannabis, we really won't matter for us where it's going to be cultivated. Because if we can find different suppliers with the right strain, with the right products, we're just really focused on building that demand. And that's why I think Latin America and Europe are going to be probably biggest markets that can be in medical, more than Canada for sure. As for the rest, I don't really have all the information there, but I think we have plenty of work to do just with the Europe and Latin.
John, anything to add to that? I know you've been keeping an eye on kind of like the global market.
I think that's bang on. Germany, I think, has certainly gotten the dominoes rolling in Europe. And now that the UK is picking up some steam, I think that's just only adding to the pressure in Spain and Italy and France. It will be interesting to see what the regulations ultimately end up looking like in those countries. Mm-hmm. And then once the regulations regulations are passed in whatever form they're in, how long it actually takes to get sales going. But I think Germany has been instructive in that a lot of excitement when they first passed the law, and then years of a very, very slow moving market until you hit this inflection point where growth started to drive at momentum. I think there's a good chance that you'll end up seeing relatively similar models, at least in terms of an initial long tail or relatively slow adoption. Then as you get more physicians active, more patients active, then you start to see that hockey stick level curve. But Alvaro makes the important point that just the passage of the law does not a market make. And focusing or prioritizing first the active markets, I think is the safer bet. I would maybe ask Alvaro a variant of that, which is, you know, you as a Colombian-based, Latin American-based stakeholder are viewing the very kind of similar positioned African producers. There's a lot of companies in Africa that are thinking about their markets the same way. Do you see competition there, or do you think there's enough to go, kind of capacity to go around?
Well, John, that's again, a very good question. We have to answer it in the short and the medium term, right? In the short term, I think every country wants foreign direct investment. Every country is trying to buy for investors to be able to invest in those countries when it comes to production. And if we're talking about the equator line, John, you know, where most of the African, yes. Like we're not the only country near the equator, right? There's plenty of countries that can produce low-cost, high-quality cannabis to export to the rest of the world. And when you... I don't think, you know, even being Colombian, that's why I never really wanted to build a company that was focused on the commodity side of it, because that's what happened with coffee. Coffee was $3.50 a pound 10 years ago, and then Brazil started producing coffee. And when you get a country like Brazil to produce that, prices go down. And I think that's what's going to happen with medical cannabis. I think, you know, it's happening today because there's too much supply for a market that in the short term is not that big. Now, so the answer to your question in the short term is that there is a lot of good competition. There is a lot of high quality out of Africa, but everybody's competing for a very low cost. In the medium term, I think there will be demand. I'm talking 5-6 years from now. There will be a lot of demand for all these international exports. I think the question is who can survive all those expenses until the market really gets that big. And one thing I would say, John, about exports and all of that is that we forget, and I think we're living it right now, the cost of logistics.
Yes.
And the speed to market. One of the reasons we decided to cultivate, well, we don't cultivate, to source from within Europe, is that we need to be very agile when the market moves up. Mm. If one day you have an uptick in demand, like we are having in the UK, and you don't have the ability to supply that quickly, you're going to lose all that market. So sometimes even with the Colombian companies, you're thinking, how do you come up with a supply chain strategy where you have to cross the Andes, cross the Atlantic Ocean, getting into Europe, and then be able to cross the channel to get the product into the hands of a patient with good quality, without, you know, submitting the flower to all these chemicals, and be able to provide a good flower every month. That's a really big challenge. So when we think about cost of production, I think people are forgetting the cost of logistics. And particularly now that we're seeing it with the pandemic, those costs of logistics are getting some of these products to be very expensive. So that, I think, is going to be an advantage for the African type of nations that are cultivating there, probably much closer if they have the right quality. The way that Latin Americans can combat that is by being able to have a much more efficient supply chain and being able to supply product very fast. Those are things nobody talks about, but as you know, we buy flour from third parties. So we are very attuned to that challenge. And that's going to be really the competition. It's not about the cost of production, is how high of a quality is going to be. And how cheaper it is at the point of delivery to the patient. Mm-hmm. And whoever can decipher that, I think is going to win 5 years from now that fight.
Amazing. Well, before we wrap, what kind of advice would you offer operators interested in importing, exporting medical cannabis?
Well, from my perspective, Heather, and again, it comes from the fact that we're very B2C focused. Mm-hmm. I think I'd like to think about it two ways. One, is it sustainable? Am I going to be able to sell month after month? And second, is there demand? Because it's easy to sell $1 million 1 month. What's difficult to do is to do $1 million every month for the next 5 years. And sometimes you overbuild your companies, I'm talking myself as well, thinking about markets that may not be there yet. Or if you're supplying to other companies, you have to really understand what their end business is. Because if they are not able to sell their final product, you may have a really good quarter, but that's going to be it. And I think we saw that in Canada already, with a lot of the B2B companies, no way, selling a lot of money, a lot of revenues 3 years ago. But if there's no demand in the end, your business as a B2B may have difficulty. So sustainability and demand, if that's the case, then I say, you know, don't overbuild it, but be able to have flexibility.
Yeah, it seems like flexibility and being agile in this industry is pretty paramount for most companies. Yeah. John, anything to add to that? Anything you can think of?
Maybe just a question. So Alvaro, you've spoken about some of the countries that you see as the next generation or the next cohort that are going to be coming up. You mentioned Argentina and Spain, potentially Italy. Which country, if you had to pick one country that you're particularly excited about or that you think might represent a particularly compelling opportunity, where in the world would you go? Which countries are you paying closest attention to?
Spain. Our partners are cultivating, mm-hmm. but from a Chiron perspective, again, right, John? I mean, we're Spanish speaking, we have our clinics, we know what the model looks like, we know how to speak to that region. It's a very big economic advantage, and we're already there. So, I mean, not just because I'm a Real Madrid fan, but overall, I think Spain is a tremendously important market, and we can be clear leaders in that one particularly.
Amazing. Well, before we wrap, Alvaro, we give our guests the opportunity to give a shout out to someone in the industry that you think is doing an amazing things. So you have the floor.
Well, Heather, I think I've been following the US MSOs for quite some time. You know, for me, companies like Trulieve, Curaleaf are giving us tremendous examples. So big shout out to them. They started a business like I am internationally 6 years ago. Nobody cared about Florida 6 years ago. Now everybody does. And I think I look at those examples of companies that know how to own demand and build brands and be patient. And I'm always looking at what Trulieve is doing because I think it's a tremendous example for companies like us who are starting in markets that seem small today, but are going to be very big. And 5 years ago, 5 years from now, people will ask, how did they start? And he was in conversation like this. So a shout out to Kim and Trulieve, who are certainly building a path that we can look up in these regions.
Amazing. Well, thank you both so much for your time and for joining us here. And thank you to our listeners. Again, please be sure to like and hit this notification bell. And please log on to newfrontierdata.com/equio-features. We have just launched our retail suite. So it has an amazing opportunity for people to see kind of what's going on week over week. And that's going to do it for today. New Frontier Data provides this podcast for entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated in this podcast should be taken as legal or financial advice. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by the company. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Views and opinions expressed by New Frontier Data employees are those of the employees and do not necessarily reflect the view of the company or any of its officials. If you have any questions about this disclaimer, please contact our legal department.